Hi-ho, or ho-ho-ho, to be more seasonable. This is Jolly Gene Rayburn, your host on this most joyous of monitor weekends, the Christmas weekend. You know, Christmas is many things, evergreens, bright colored ornaments, gifts and goodwill, bell ringing, carol singing, and according to Peggy Lee, this merry holiday is a kind of merry-go-round.
Christmas is a carousel, and round we go. Busy doing, wrapping things for everyone we know. Trim the house and trim the tree, and let the spirit show. Sing some carols loud and clear, and set the lights aglow. Hang a stocking for Saint Nick, and he will fill it up. Don't forget to leave some cookies and a Christmas cup. Leave some food for all these reindeer and the Christmas mouse. Leave a little bit of cheese somewhere around the house. Now I think that we're all set, so let's all take a ride. Don't you feel the Christmas joy that makes you glad inside? Hold your candy cane way out as round and round we go. And if you should catch the ring, it's made of mistletoe.
What can be done to make the non-drinker's plight more pleasant? Well, the answer is at hand here, as Miss Rollin has galloped or driven up with the answers. She's co-author of the Non-Drinker's Drink Book. She's a very pretty young lady, and we welcome her to monitor. She is Betty Rollin.
Hello, thank you.
Betty, you have some intriguing headings in your book, and with all the wassailing going on at this time of the year, we ought to investigate the ones titled Cocktails Zero Proof. That's one of your early chapters, isn't it?
Yes, that's the main one, I suppose. Those are the recipes for drinks that most of which look like real drinks.
I see.
But aren't, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes everything from fruit juice concoctions to strange herb things that take about 3 hours to make. Which aren't, they're not, I wasn't quite serious about those, but most of them are really quite simple.
Yeah. You have bogus booze? What is it?
Yes,
that?
Bogus booze is, well, actually, that began, what I tried to do with that was to approximate scotch and gin. I thought that would be a wonderful idea if I could just approximate the flavors of scotch and gin. So I thought, I'll have a chapter called Bogus Booze. I couldn't do that at all. I mean, just this complete dismal flop.
You want to achieve the taste of, let's say, scotch.
Scotch or gin. I think that'd be a great idea,
without any of the
obvious effects of that. But I couldn't do that at all. So what I wound up with was a chapter with drinks that, some of the liqueurs can be approximated, like
mm-hmm.
Brandy Alexander, if they're sweet, because
mm-hmm.
there are things like on the market like non-alcoholic creme de cacao that you can. So there are funny little things like that you can do, but no scotch.
Yeah. Now, Betty, would you give us one specific cocktail hour idea that people might be able to jot down right now and experiment with and try out?
Yeah, well, this is very easy. And also acceptable. Some of them are quite strange, but this is really quite normal. It's called a non-Bloody Mary, and it's 3 ounces of tomato juice, juice of 1/2 of a lemon, pinch salt, pinch pepper, pinch celery salt, 1/2 teaspoon Worcestershire sauce, cracked ice, an ice cube, and a sprig of mint. And it says here, shake all ingredients well with cracked ice, strain into 1 old-fashioned glass with ice cube, garnish with mint.
Voila, you have a non-Bloody Mary. Now, there are some drinks that taste the same whether there is an alcoholic content to them or not, aren't there?
Right, like...
What are some of those?
Well, the great reliable one is vodka and tonic without vodka. one of the more difficult recipes to make. And that's a perfect example because vodka doesn't taste...
Has no taste, really.
And you put
the lime in it? So
yes,
that it looked the
absolutely.
Same,
you always do with these things. You always do, you know, the appurtenance is galore. I mean, you know, just be as fancy about it as you can possibly be. And, you know, it's sort of a what's wrong with the picture. You can't quite see it. I mean, you can't feel it either.
You've covered all fields. I noticed something that I want to try in there. A low-cal ice, was it an ice cream soda?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of low-calorie things.
Yeah, because... I'm a chocolate nut, and I think people who like chocolate and ice cream sodas would want to try something like that in the book.
Oh, yeah, some of them really have just about no... That no-cal stuff is terrific, and if you just do things like mix ice in a blender and milk, it just gets wonderfully frothy, and it's simply great, and there are no calories at all.
I'm going to go home and get my blender and whip up a big batch of froth and drink it, and no-cal froth, I'm going to name the drink. Since we're in the midst of the holiday season, we've been concentrating on that part of the non-drinker's drink book that seems most appropriate, but of course there are many recipes or formulas, if you like, for non-alcoholic drinks of a dessert variety, of a cooling kind, all sorts of tea drinks. And those of our listeners who are interested will be able to peruse them at their leisure. And Betty Rollin, we thank you for being our guest here on Monitor.
Thank you.
The Town Choir with one of the new carols, African Noel. Wherever you are, we wish you a very Merry Christmas from all of us on the Monitor Beacon.
Join in a joyful salute to Israel by attending the Hanukkah Festival for Israel at Madison Square Garden, Monday, January 3rd. You can get free tickets by buying Israel bonds. For prospectus and Israel bonds, call OR7-9650. 0479650. Did you know that food labels are required by law to give an honest statement of the amount of food in the container? Learn to be a label reader and a wise consumer. This is a public service announcement from the Food and Drug Administration in cooperation with this station, WNBC AM and FM, New York.
Gene Rayburn here, and once again we open Monitor's audio mailbag to deliver a message from one of our American servicemen who must spend Christmas away from home.
Hello, Monitor. This is Airman First Class Alan B. McLeod speaking to you from Cape Lisbon, Alaska. I'd like to take this time out to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, especially my wife, Gloria, and my children, Tanya, Tracy, and Mark. Also, the rest of the family. My home is in Columbia, South Carolina, originally.
And we hope he can get back there very soon. That'd be the one present he'd want most, we're sure. Monitor's greeting to our servicemen and women in Alaska and everywhere else in the world. More servicemen's messages a little later on and throughout the weekend. Now, Rudolph the Red-Nosed, Lawrence Welk.
This is Mel Allen at the Monitor Sports Desk wishing everyone a Merry Christmas. And because today is Christmas, I want to tell you the story of a man who gave more Yuletide pleasure to more American youngsters than anyone I know. His name was Alfred Carlton Gilbert, and he was a big man in a boy's world. Now, you may remember him as A.C. Gilbert, whose company was the leading manufacturer of scientific toys, everything from the Erector set to the American Flyer scale model electric trains. For several generations, no youngster would have felt Christmas was really Christmas unless he found one of A.C. Gilbert's toys under his tree. Yet Gilbert might never have been able to play Santa Claus to America's youth had it not been for his career as a pole vaulter. Oh, and what a vaulter he was. National and Olympic champion and two-time world record holder. His best height, 12 feet 7 and 3/4 inches back in 1907. He was an innovator, too. The man who first took the spike off the end of the pole and substituted the box or small pit into the earth into which the pole was placed. That happened in the 1908 Olympics, only he didn't get away with it. After chopping a hole in the sacred soil of England with a hatchet, Gilbert was ruled out of order by the officials. He was told to refill it and vault with the traditional spike at the end of his pole, and it almost cost him the Olympic championship. Gilbert led one section of vaulters in the preliminaries at 12 feet even. A Cornell star, E.T. Cook, led the other with 12-2. Then in the finals, Gilbert cleared only 12 feet again and was the apparent winner, although he had one more try left. It was then that he learned that the British, anxious to teach the upstart American a lesson for his breach of pole vaulting tradition, had ruled that Cook's preliminary vault of 12 feet 2 inches was going to be counted in the finals. Now, nothing like that had ever happened before, or since, for that matter. Anyway, Gilbert matched Cook at 12-2 on his final attempt, and the two were declared co-Olympic champions. Now, what has pole vaulting to do with Gilbert's manufacture of toys? Well, when Gilbert was at Yale, he gained a reputation as an amateur magician. He often was asked to teach his friends tricks, and in self-defense, he began to manufacture magic kits, and this in turn blossomed into a $20 million a year business. But it might never have happened were it not for 50 bamboo poles. You see, after Gilbert was declared co-Olympic champion in London in 1908, he went on a short tour of Europe. In Paris, he located 50 bamboo poles, just the right size for vaulting, paid only $1.25 for them apiece, had them shipped home to New Haven and Yale, free, as Olympic team equipment. And so when he himself returned home, he sold all the poles for $25 each, cleared a profit of $1,100, and with that money, he went into the magic and toy manufacturing business. It's something you might think about today, Christmas, especially if you've ever played with one of his toys when you were a youngster. Anyway, Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Mel Allen for Monitor Sports.
Okay, and speaking about toys and presents, NBC Radio has 5 holiday presents for football fans. The American Football League Championship tomorrow, the East-West Shrine Game, December 31st, and on New Year's Day, a tripleheader. The Sugar Bowl, the Rose Bowl, and Orange Bowl games all on NBC Radio. If there really is a Santa, and I'm not saying there isn't, he'd probably sound just like Burl Ives, who sounds like this.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you. Kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you. Yes, sir, once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
One of the regular members of our Happy Monitor family is Selma Diamond, writer, comedian, and a close observer of the passing scene, which she views through whatever would be the opposite of rose-colored glasses. In other words, Selma isn't always happy with what she sees.
How do you like what's going on with actors in Hollywood these days? Oh, I'm not talking about running around with girls and getting married, and not necessarily in that order. After all, that goes on in Brooklyn, and I don't have to tell you what goes on in Peyton Place. I'm talking about actors running for public office. George Murphy got himself elected to the Senate, and now Ronald Reagan has intentions. What gets me is George Murphy, the former song and dance man in the Senate. It seems to me that if this is going to be a trend, and if you're planning a future in politics, see that you brush up on your dancing. Remember that advertisement, learn to dance and be popular? Well, now it's learn to dance and be popular with the voters. So don't be surprised if the neighborhood political club becomes the most popular discotheque in town. Whoever thought Roseland would be the first step towards a political conscience? Makes you think, doesn't it? It does me. I keep thinking that the power behind the power in Washington could be Catherine Murray. Can you imagine Arthur Murray, the maker of presidents? What's more, in the future, if a television actor balks about his part, his agent will be there to remind him that if he turns down this part to be seen by millions on television, he's not only blowing Broadway and Hollywood, but Washington. But what really bothers me as a comedy writer is that this kind of future may put me out of work. Because I've listened to a lot of those speeches the politicians come up with before the election, and believe me, that stuff is funnier than anything I could ever write.
I'd like to disagree with that last statement by Selma Diamond, but I was brought up to believe that a gentleman never argues with a lady, and so all I can say is that Selma will continue to write funny lines and continue to air them in her appearances here on Monitor. We'll bring you up to date on the holiday weekend world with latest NBC News on the hour just a minute away. Gene Rayburn here.
This is Christopher Plummer saying that I'm always very pleased and flattered to be on Monitor. And I wish you all in Monitor a very Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
Lionel Hampton and the All-Star Parade of Bands, New Year's Eve on the NBC Radio Network.